Please call the case.
Case number SCWC-15-396, Adams v. Hawaii Medical Service Association.
Counsel, please identify yourself for the record. Thank you. Counsel, you may proceed.
May it please the court. The point in time at which an insurer's duty of good faith towards its insurer arises is at the inception of the policy. As this court held in Best Place, in Anoka, in Katron versus Tokyo Marine, there's a duty before the claim is filed, while the claim is being processed, and even after settlement of the claim. Whereas this court held in Anoka, the duty of good faith is owed even when there's no coverage under the policy. The ICA's error in this case occurred at page 5 of their summary disposition order, where they stated the duties of good faith and fair dealing are implied in every insurance contract arise after the insured complies with the claims procedure described in the insurance policy. This rule departs from this court's holding in Anoka and other cases. The duty of good faith is independent of other duties under the policy and applies even if there is no coverage.
In this case, Mr. Everly, actually a claim had been filed. It was just a letter requesting a particular type of medical procedure.
Correct. In March, I think Your Honor is referring to the pre-authorization request in March 2006.
Wasn't a claim filed before that?
There were no requests for this specific procedure. There were no written requests as required by the policy. However, there were numerous oral communications in which the Adams and their doctors informed HMSA that the allotransplant was the preferred option that the doctors wanted to pursue.
Wasn't there a discussion that allowed Mr. Adams to go to California for treatment?
Correct. The Adams one initially had done research and were to go to a facility elsewhere on the mainland, but HMSA recommended that they go to the City of Hope facility in Southern California.
So generally speaking, the claim for coverage for this disease had been made because they were aware and actually requested that Mr. Adams go to the City of Hope.
I think that's a good way to look at it. Our position is that HMSA knew what was being requested at least by November 2005, when the case notes from HMSA indicate that Ms. Adams, first of all, asked the case manager what the coverage was, and informed the case manager at that time that the allotransplant was what the doctors had recommended.
Could I interrupt you just for a moment and ask you, with respect to the error that you identified in page 5 of the ICA's opinion, are you suggesting that the facts that you have just focused on, those facts in terms of discussions with HMSA about the procedures that were anticipated, were not considered by the ICA?
That's correct. The ICA and the trial court only considered the written request under the policy itself. There had to be a written request for pre-authorization for this procedure.
Where do they get that from? Is that like something that they're looking at the contract when we're looking at a tort claim that's separate from the contract? I mean, why did they choose that specific? Why didn't they choose when it's, they said when it's received. Why didn't they say when it's mailed or when it's first reviewed? Or, I mean, they could have picked any specific point in time, it seems to me. I mean, why did they focus in on when it was submitted to HMSA?
The plan or the policy says that for a procedure such as an auto transplant or an allo transplant must be submitted in writing seeking pre-authorization for coverage. Our point, however, is that we're beyond the contractual claim. The ICA determined that there was no breach of contract claim. That claim has been dismissed. We're here on a separate, independent tort duty, as this court has recognized in Best Place and other cases, where the insurance company owes a duty of good faith and fair dealing at all times throughout the existence of the policy towards the insurer. So when the Adams are telling HMSA, at least as early as November 2005, what the preferred procedure is, what the doctors are recommending, and when HMSA tells the Adams in writing that we will help you make the best use of your plan and we will ensure maximum benefits under your plan, but never tell the Adams that the procedure, never tell them until March 2006 that the procedure is excluded, is a breach of the duty of good faith and fair dealing.
Now, if you could just help me with this analysis that would suggest that there really isn't room to interpret these facts as constituting bad faith, because the contract is certainly relevant to determining the relationship between the parties, and the contract as interpreted by the ICA makes it clear that there isn't coverage for an allo transplant. And when the HMSA had the opportunity in compliance with the plan to inform the insured, they did so within, what, 4 days?
Two business days, correct.
So why wouldn't that mean that essentially they were complying with the contract as it was meant to define the relationship of the parties?
We don't dispute that they complied with the contract. They responded within 2 business days.
I didn't mean to ask you whether they complied with the contract. I was just saying that in interpreting the relationship, you can look at the contract, and in doing so, if you look at the way they performed pursuant to the contract, why wouldn't that sequence of events mean that you couldn't possibly find bad faith?
Because the duty of good faith and fair dealing is much broader than that. Best Place says that the dealings, that the insured must treat the insured fairly in dealing with the insured. It doesn't make a cut, draw a line like the ICA did in relying upon a California case. It's much broader than that. The duty is owed from the inception of the policy. We're talking about an independent cause of action, as this court recognized in Best Place.
All right. And then following your analysis, when would the duty to act in good faith, this implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing, when would that duty have arisen?
It arose at the inception of the policy.
So at the very beginning, when HMSA had communication with the insured, the information should have been supplied, in your view, that there would not be coverage granted under the contract for the allo transplant.
That's correct, Your Honor. When the Adams consistently, for a period of several months, and their doctor is telling HMSA that the allo transplant is the preferred option, what the doctor is recommending, when HMSA promises in writing to provide assistance and help them make maximum use of the benefits under the policy, yet never tells the Adams,
excuse me,
that it's excluded, that's bad faith.
The question actually was, when did the duty arise? Previously you said that the duty actually arises when the person obtains the contract. In fact, our courts have stated several times that what a person is buying is the protection and the security that insurance provides an individual. So that duty exists under your position from the beginning. What you were just answering about when these letters and communications, that would be your position as to where the breaches may have occurred, not where the duty arose.
No, Your Honor, I believe the duty arises from the inception of the policy. There's a duty throughout the policy period to treat the insured in good faith.
Mr. Everly, one of your arguments is that because there appeared to be some delay in communicating to your client that the allogenic treatment would not be available, that it really impaired Mr. Adams' chance of survival. When at some point in time there was a request that his siblings be tested for this allogenic transplant, and that request was denied, why wasn't that an indication to you? And problematically, it was denied unless somebody was a match, and then they would pay for it, which I don't understand that. But why wasn't that an indication to Mr. Adams that the allogenic treatment was not going to be approved of?
Well, first of all, a match means finding someone, a third person who from whom the stem cells can be harvested. And
I understand that.
HMSA did say that if a donor was found, they would pay for that.
Pay for
the testing of the actual donor. They wouldn't pay for the five siblings to find which one might be a match. But the point is, under the duty of good faith and fair dealing, when the insured is asking for assistance, asking what the coverage is, and is telling the insurance company that they want to do the allo treatment, and the insurance company knows all along that that is excluded under the policy, it's a breach of the duty of good faith and fair dealing not to tell the insured that that is not covered. They didn't do that until March 2006.
When the insurance company indicated, Justice Nakayama was asking about, indicated that they would consider paying for a donor, if it was a successful donor, one of the siblings that actually matched, how would the insured have interpreted that? In other words, for what purpose would the insurance, the insurer approve this procedure if it wasn't for the allo transplant?
I think that was an indication, excuse me, from HMSA that it was going to be covered. All indications to the Adams were that this procedure was going to be covered. If they were saying we'll pay for the actual donor, that's an indication that they're going to pay. They're going to cover the allo transplant. Whether HMSA's silence was in bad faith was a decision for the jury to make, not the court on a motion for summary judgment. This is what the ICA held when it quoted this court in Willis versus Swain, where this court held generally questions of bad faith are questions of fact, and allegations of bad faith regarding fair dealing by the insurer with its insured are the kind of issue best decided by a jury and not by the court. Nevertheless, the ICA apparently felt that no reasonable jury could find that HMSA acted in bad faith by not telling the Adams that the allo transplant was excluded. This court in Best Place, in Anoka, and other cases has held that there is a legal duty implied in a first-party policy such as we have here, that the insurer must act in good faith in dealing with its insured. A breach of the duty is an independent tort cause of action under Best Place.
Mr. Everly, just for argument's sake, the idea that there was a delay meant that you didn't have a chance to appeal the denial. But in fact, the appeal of the denial didn't occur until 2007, right?
Yes. What happened, the allo transplant was denied in March 2006.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor felt there was not enough time to appeal. There was a certain period of time after the first transplant, the second one had to be done.
Okay.
Although the doctor wanted to do the allotransplant because he thought there was a better chance of avoiding a relapse, he went ahead and did the autotransplant without waiting to appeal. Brent Adams had a relapse in October 2006, and that's when a second effort was made, or a second request was made for the allotransplant, which was denied by HMSA. Then there was an appeal, and eventually he did have the allotransplant in 2007.
So the appeal, when you appealed to the board, I guess appealed the initial denial, that didn't come until February 2007?
Correct.
Okay.
The duty of good faith is based upon the reasonable expectations of the insured and the unequal bargaining position of the parties. Further, in Best Place, the court held that the insurer has an obligation to deal fairly with its insured and not deprive the insured of benefits for which he contracted. The duty is breached when the insurer's conduct damages the very protection that the insured sought in buying the insurance.
Mr. Everly, were the siblings tested for an allogenic transplant?
They were tested for their stem cells to see whether they could be harvested and were a match. The Adams paid for that testing.
And did any of the siblings come up a match?
Yes, there was one sister that was a match, but it was done in New Zealand, and City of Hope had to do their own testing. And by March 2006, that had not yet been determined. So at that point, there was not yet a known match.
Did HMSA ever end up paying for that testing of the sibling?
I don't know, Your Honor. I know that the Adams paid. I don't know if they were reimbursed by HMSA. The insurer's bad faith can arise even after claims are settled. That's from Catron versus Tokyo Marine. And even if there's no coverage under the policy, the insurer can still be in breach of the duty of good faith and fair dealing. That's from Anoka versus.
Could I ask you, in defining the duty that would apply in this case, is it relevant that the condition that's at issue is a condition that requires very immediate treatment?
I think it always depends upon the circumstances, and under Best Place, there's a duty to act reasonably. If there's unreasonable action, that's bad faith.
In other words, if this had been a medical procedure that didn't have the sort of timeliness issue with respect to, I guess, the possibility of survival, would you define the duty differently?
Again, I think it would depend upon the circumstances. If it wasn't a dire situation, a claim for bad faith, you must prove damages. So if there's a delay and it doesn't cause any damage, then I don't think that would not be bad faith. But under these circumstances, where time is of the essence, to not tell the Adams for several months that this procedure was excluded was in bad faith.
At what point was it an issue? From the very beginning? Do you think it was known to, is the evidence, in your view, is there an issue of material fact as to whether HMSA knew at the very beginning that this was a time-sensitive treatment issue? By the very beginning, I'm talking about when they first were notified of the request to perform the procedure.
I think as a medical insurer, they certainly had to know that this was an urgent process. And they did keep asking for the pre-authorization request, although they knew that it was going to be excluded. The ruling we asked for, that this court vacate the entry of summary judgment for HMSA and remand for a trial, is consistent with Best Place and Anoka and this court's bad faith jurisprudence. In contrast, to affirm the ICA would be to depart from Best Place and Anoka in these other cases. The Adams therefore requests the entry of summary judgment in favor of HMSA be vacated and the case remanded for a trial on the merits. There's
Thank
no
you,
further
Mr.
questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'd like to reserve my time. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Petitioner Appellant Adams has admitted in the application for writ of certiorari that HMSA timely denied the claim in compliance with the policy. And it's very important for purposes of our discussion today to keep in mind that the claim that was remanded by the ICA in 2013 is the 2006 request for coverage of an allotransplant as the second part of the two transplant procedure. It was originally approved as an autologist, I'll refer to that as an autotransplant tandem, one auto followed by another, and that was the procedure that the member flew to California for in December 2005. The request to change that to an allotransplant was not made in compliance with the provisions of the policy, i.e. in writing pre-auth request, until March of 2016.
At what point in time did Dr. Stein inform HMSA that he would prefer doing an autoallogenic transplant?
On January 11th of 2016, there is a documentation in the record that Dr. Stein spoke with Greg Keast, and at that point informed Keast that he wanted to enroll Mr. Adams into a clinical trial in order to be able to obtain coverage for the second part of the tandem transplant. And the HMSA plan does provide coverage for routine costs of care in a clinical trial. So if Mr. Adams had been accepted to have the allotransplant as the second part of the clinical, of the tandem transplant, he could have received the allotransplant. It would have required a pre-auth request. You know, clinical trials separately require pre-authorization. And as Greg Keast in that note of January 11th, 2006, informed Dr. Stein, participation in clinical trials are decided on a case-by-case basis by the medical director. So that is the pre-authorization request that Greg Keast was expecting from Dr. Stein throughout January and February 2006, because that was truly the only way there was going to be coverage for an allotransplant for this member.
So, go ahead.
Don't HMSA's case management logs indicate that the Adams requested information regarding coverage on November 2nd and 3rd, 2005 to help them decide whether to continue the process of enrolling Mr. Adams in a tandem auto allo clinical trial at University of Arkansas? And at that time, HMSA, Mr. Makizuru, advised them that Arkansas was not an approved center, and then that seems to have steered them to City of Hope.
They did indeed proceed to go to City of Hope on the recommendation of HMSA, in as much as that is an approved Blue Center of Excellence.
And isn't there at least a question of fact as to whether or not Ms. Adams had mentioned auto-allo in November of 2005?
Your Honor, mentioning auto-allo does not constitute a request for coverage under the plan. The way Mr.
Position then is that unless you request coverage, the tort duty doesn't exist. Is that your theory? I guess the ICA's theory.
I think I would qualify that to the extent that when you have a claim for bad faith mishandling of a claim, which is the bad faith that was alleged by Adams in the second amended complaint, you cannot mishandle a claim until a claim is made. And the insurance contract defines a claim as a written request for benefits.
How does that square with all our law in Best Place, in NOCA? I mean, there's several cases we say again and again, the implied covenant is breached whether the carrier pays the claim or not. So it makes no difference whether the carrier pays a claim, which certainly one would assume it doesn't make a difference if one makes a claim. But nevertheless, it says that the insured buys security and protection. That's what the insurer does when it gets insurance. And that's when the duty of good faith arises.
Your Honor, I'm not here to defend an assertion that the insurance company owes no duty of good faith and fair dealing to its insured until a claim is made. What I am arguing to this court, and what I believe is determinative of the whether the trial court summary judgment decision must be upheld, is that the brand of bad faith that Adams alleged in the complaint was mishandling of his claim, and no claim was made for the aloe treatment until March 2nd, 2006.
When Ms. Adams called in November and said, we want to go to Arkansas for an auto aloe, why then steer her to City of Hope if it was going to be denied down the line? How is that not mishandling the claim? They could have gotten their first choice. If it wasn't going to be paid, they could have gone to Arkansas and tried to find the money themselves.
The assertion that was made repeatedly throughout the application, Your Honor, that HMSA knew there would be no coverage for this is simply contrary to the factual record. HMSA did not know.
They kept saying case-by-case basis, right? But at the time it was denied, it was, we don't cover this. It had nothing to do with case-by-case basis.
Well, as a matter of fact, Your Honor, Dr. Stein did not proceed to request the coverage in the clinical trial. Keast was told in January of 2006 that Dr. Stein was contemplating doing this in a clinical trial. Dr. Stein knew that that was necessary because he testified under oath in the 2007 proceeding that he knew as early as November 2005 that allo transplant was not a covered benefit under Mr. Adams' plan. So he knew he had to do this as part of a clinical trial, and he was waiting to see if there was a sibling match to submit his request. And unfortunately, he did not submit that request until March 2nd, 2006. And even at that point, it was qualified with if there is a sibling match. Now, we dispute, and I believe the record is clear, that Dr. Stein could have appealed the denial that he received on March 8th, 2006. The plan provides for 3-day turnaround on an expedited basis. The plan was aware that this was a time-sensitive matter, Justice Wilson, as you had indicated.
Ms. Brookins,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Chief Justice.
Why would you say that you would pay for the testing of a matching, if one of the siblings was matching, if you already knew that you were going to pay for an allogenic transplant?
Well, Dr. Stein's testimony was that when he requested testing, HLA-type testing, he was told that it was denied because Mr. Adams didn't qualify for an allotransplant. Now, I will concede that there are different references in the record on that, but it just doesn't matter to whether the claim that was made on March 2nd, 2006, once Dr. Stein decided to proceed, which claim was not for participation in a clinical trial. Dr. Stein's staff clearly testified that if it's going to be in a clinical trial, the request will say that.
Do you dispute that you conveyed to the Adams that HMSA would not pay for testing of siblings unless one of them was shown to be a match? Do you dispute that representation?
I believe what HMSA informed, and I don't have the record in front of me, Your Honor, so the message that was communicated is that HMSA will not pay for HLA typing if a member is not approved for an allo transplant. And in that case, they'll only pay for the actual donor. And that is very consistent with the language of the insurance policy, which, as Justice Wilson points out, truly is the document that defines the relationship between the insurer and the insured. So, Justice Pollack, I'm not saying that it wasn't possible for HMSA to have violated the obligation of good faith and fair dealing. What I'm saying is the claim that was alleged in the complaint, there is no record evidence to support a violation on that basis. And
if the complaint is articulated that you mishandled the claim, why doesn't it include all the allegations that we've been discussing today? And there seems to be a lot of discussion about what somebody said or didn't say or the interpretation. Why aren't those all disputed facts?
All of those disputed facts would have occurred whether or not a claim was ever submitted, Your Honor.
That's correct. And why does a claim need to be submitted? Because if the mishandling of the claim is how you... In other words, you're going back to the position, it seems to me, of the intermediate court saying if a claim is not filed, there's no breach of the duty.
No, Your Honor, I'm not, because that's not the issue that was before the ICA. It's not the issue that was before Judge Crandall. It's not the issue that was before the ICA, and it's not the issue that's before this court.
Why isn't the a representation by HMSA that may have delayed the submission of a written claim part and parcel of mishandling a claim, if it delays it at all?
I don't believe there is any evidence that HMSA misrepresented anything that delayed the submission of the claim. In fact, the record confirms that Greg Keast, as soon as Dr. Stein told him, I want to do this in a clinical trial, kept at him and requested several times. The only delay was in Dr. Stein's submission. And at that point, HMSA responded extremely quickly, as quickly as they would have if it had been marked urgent, even though it wasn't.
So if, by telling the Adams that one of your siblings, we will pay for the testing if he's a match, if Mr. Adams qualifies for the allogenic transplant, that's not misleading at all, when he would never qualify because you don't allow the allogenic transplant.
The HLA typing would have been required as part of the clinical trial as well, Your Honor. That is a very important point that's been completely glossed over by the appellants, is that it was not known whether Mr. Adams would be able to have this allo transplant until the request came in from Stein, and it was either for coverage in a clinical trial or not.
Did Mr. No. Keast or Mr. Makizuru ever tell Mrs. Adams that?
What Mr.
Throughout her numerous phone conversations with him?
What Mr. Wade, I apologize. What he told Mrs. Adams is that she should get in touch with the pre-auth area at the City of Hope and ask them if there's anything that needs to be done in order to move this forward. That's what he told her.
This was after HMSA told her that she needed to go to the City of Hope and not Arkansas.
Your Honor, she had
after
a potential.
We want to go to Arkansas for an auto allo, and HMSA says, no, you need to go to City of Hope. And now you're saying you didn't know until the March 2nd, and then you were able to deny it in 2 days? I mean, what is all this? Makes no sense to me, candidly.
Your Honor, what HMSA told Mrs. Adams is if you want coverage under your HMSA plan, you need to go to a blue center of distinction for transplants, and that is clearly laid out in the insurance contract. I understand that Adams has asserted what he understands is what he feels is unreasonable behavior, and I understand that it may trouble this court, and perhaps it might trouble a jury, but that's why summary judgment is necessary, Your Honor.
Winter, excuse me.
I'm not necessarily arguing that your analysis, your factual analysis, that really all this discussion that took place with the case managers about having a sibling tested was related to a trial, in which case the procedure that was at issue for the allo transplant would have perhaps been permitted. Okay, but what we're talking about is summary judgment, and I understand your point is that somehow there should have been, the record is clear that there should have been an understanding that these discussions had to do with a trial, not necessarily with a non-trial allo transplant. So let me read to you this December 23rd, 2005 entry in the case comments, where it says, this is Cynthia, notified HMSA only pays for donor testing. In addition, members' approval is for an autologous BMT, not an allogenic BMT. If patient to receive an allogenic BMT, a new request is required stating this, and she understands. So this is being communicated to Mrs. Adams, and she agrees to rescind the case, it says. Well, in this instance, there's no mention that it's a trial transplant that's under discussion, and it would seem that one could interpret this to mean that the position that's being taken is that as long as you are able to get a donor that qualifies, then you could get the allogenic transplant, in which case it's a misrepresentation And misunderstanding might be the generous way to put it, but it's a misrepresentation perhaps with respect to your point of view, which is actually it wasn't for the normal procedure, it was for a trial procedure.
Your Honor, obviously the tort of bad faith cannot expand or alter, and maybe alter is a better term than expand, cannot alter the terms of the insurance contract. That is black letter law. In order to have a claim for bad faith, the insurer's conduct cannot be based on a reasonable interpretation of the policy.
Wouldn't it seem that threshold question has been passed as to what is expected under the contract? Of course, the contract anticipates that there's going to be a request for potentially an allotransplant because it specifically has language in it that talks to whether and that addresses whether an allotransplant is available for this type of an illness.
And as the ICA held in Adams 1, it is not, which makes participation in a clinical trial the only way that Mr. Adams was going to be able to receive the allotransplant consistent with the coverage under his policy.
Yes, that may well be, but I think underlying our questions is the point that, okay, well, tell the insured that the contract says you can't have it unless it's a trial. And in this narrative of case notes, it appears that the insured may well have understood that as long as we can work it out to have a donor that qualifies, we'll be able to have the allotransplant.
Your Honor, there were three separate requests for coverage that affected this whole situation. There was a request for HLA typing, which was timely denied. There was the request for coverage for allotransplant on March 2, 2006, which was timely denied and is conceded to have been timely denied. And then there was the request for coverage in 2007 that was denied, appealed, and overturned. All we are talking about here, the only thing that was remanded by the ICA was whether HMSA mishandled the request in 2006 for the allogeneic bone marrow transplant.
Maybe I'm assuming something I shouldn't. Is this discussion with the assumption that all of the communications that preceded the request for certification March 2nd, Dr. Steiner, irrelevant because you only start at that point in analyzing whether or not there was bad faith in the handling of the claims?
What Judge Crandall decided, Your Honor, correctly,
I'm just asking your position at this point, because we can interpret Judge Crandall's viewpoint perhaps in different ways, but your position at least is that all the discussions that took place prior to March 2, 2006 essentially are irrelevant with respect to a bad faith claim based on mishandling of claims?
What we are asking this court to focus on are the claims that were stated in the second amended complaint after remand.
How would you relate that answer to the question of whether or not the discussions prior to March 6, 2006 that related to the handling of claims were relevant or not?
Because they were initially alleged in the second amended complaint as being a request for prior authorization. Indeed, the second amended complaint asserts that there was a one-month delay from when the request was made to when it was approved, and that was because Mr. Del Castillo did not know at that point when the request was made.
So is it relevant to consider facts that might have misled the insured to think that HMSA was saying that you actually could have coverage for the allotransplant?
They're not relevant to whether the claim that was received on March 2, 2006 was mishandled, which was the issue remanded by the ICA.
Okay, and if it was relevant, would you concede that the kind of communication that took place prior to March 2, 2006 included facts that could constitute questions of material fact as to whether there was a violation of...
No, Your Honor. No, Your Honor. Everything that HMSA communicated to the Adamses, as documented in the record, is fully consistent with and supported by the insurance contract.
Is that
the conduct
also
by an insurer that is reasonable is not bad faith.
So everything, too, that HMSA communicated to Dr. Stein, was none of it was... it was all by the board. I mean, it was all no misrepresentations, nothing.
There were no misrepresentations made to Dr. Stein, Your Honor. In fact, HMSA, the case manager's job, Greg Keast's job, was to help the member interact with his medical providers.
Did Dr.
And that's what he did, based on the record.
Did Dr. Stein say he was surprised by your denial of the coverage? Because through several months of contact, HMSA never implied or informed him that the allogeneic transplant was not covered?
No, as a matter of fact, he did not, Your Honor. And what Dr. Stein said when asked under oath in his deposition at City of Hope was, why didn't you appeal the denial in 2006? And he said, well, because it is investigational. I didn't have any science that I could submit to support an overturn of the decision in 2006. Now, he was fairly surprised in 2007, but that's a different appeal.
Okay, well, this is what he said, I guess, and you can explain it. My office and other City of Hope personnel had several contacts with HMSA in early 2006 attempting to obtain authorization for Brent's second tandem transplant to be an allogeneic rather than the autologous, and we were never advised that the allogeneic transplant was not a benefit of Brent's plan. We also commenced authorization, it goes on. So there seems to, it seems to be a disputed fact.
Actually, Dr. Stein's testimony under oath was that...
I'm asking you, is this part of the record? I mean, is this, I understand he may have testified to different things, but that's what we have trials for.
Your Honor, we have motions for summary judgment because when the law draws a bright line, it shouldn't go to a jury. The law here draws a bright line that you cannot mishandle a claim until a claim is received. There may be other ways that an insured can violate their duties, but you cannot mishandle a claim until a claim is received.
Okay, so we are back at that position. So that position is, in order to mishandle a claim, the claim has to be filed.
Email communications, phone calls are irrelevant.
The email communications and the phone calls between the Adamses and HMSA cannot constitute a claim under the plain language of the plan. A written request for coverage, and it wasn't an email. I don't believe I've seen any emails between the Adamses and HMSA, so I want to be sure the record is correct on that. There's a number of telephone conversations, but I don't believe the record includes email communications, and then Dr. Stein's telephone communication. Also, not a written request for payment of benefits, and the plan clearly says that prior authorization requests must be made in writing. So it's not unreasonable to enforce those.
Based on your position, let's say, and this is just hypothetical now, let's say that the HMSA claims manager tells the insured, you know what, wait until July 1st to submit your claim because this procedure may be covered as of July. It's not covered now, so wait. Don't submit it now, right? Because right now you'd have to get it approved on a case-by-case basis or based on a clinical trial basis. And as of July 1st, it looks like it's going to be covered. And then so the insured waits until July 1st, and then lo and behold, it's the plan now says it's actually even going to be more limited. There would be no bad faith claim because the claim was actually not submitted, even if the insurance company says no need to officially submit a claim right now.
A, Your Honor, that's not what I'm saying, and B, that's not what happened here. There is no evidence in the record, and the case has to be decided on the record that was before Judge Crandall at the time she ruled on the motion, and there is no evidence of HMSA having encouraged the Adams to wait or of HMSA having told Dr. Stein, you don't need to do this. In fact, the only record evidence is that HMSA, once it knew there might be a shot at coverage in a clinical trial, kept on Dr. Stein to get him to submit that pre-authorization
and
request.
And did HMSA keep going back to the Adams to let him know, listen, what we're missing is something from Dr. Stein or for something from City of Hope. You've got to get him to submit this request based on the clinical trial.
There's evidence in the record that HMSA communicated the need for the pre-authorization request and that it was sitting with Dr. Stein and that we needed to hear from Dr. Stein. And those telephone calls were made.
As a clinical trial, that you have to get Dr. Stein to submit this clinical trial request.
Actually, Your Honor, I don't believe Mr. Keast did tell the Adams that because the Adams understood they were already in a clinical trial. and actually submitted evidence that they were in a clinical trial. And as the court may be aware, a clinical trial has two arms. There's the standard treatment arm, and then there's the investigational treatment arm. And so Mr. Adams had already been approved for the auto transplant, which was part of the standard treatment arm. The issue is that in order to be included in the allo transplant arm, there needed to be a separate pre-auth request and that for the clinical trial, and that was clearly communicated to Dr. Stein and reiterated.
Now, Ms. Winter-Brookings, you were explaining how this history of communication prior to March 6th is just consistent with a straightforward application of the conditions of the contract and didn't in any way mislead the Adams to think that they were going to be able to get the allotransplant. So let me ask you, why would they wait after when contact in November with HMSA, where there's an indication to HMSA that I guess it's accepted that treatment is required for the condition that Mr. Adams has. So HMSA is notified then. Why would, if you follow me, why would the Adams wait until March 6th and then submit certification unless they thought they'd be able to get the transplant?
The evidence in the record, Your Honor, is that Mrs. Adams understood in her discussions with Keast that if the auto transplant, which wasn't done until January, if that was not, or at the end of December, they came back, if that worked well, and you have to wait a while to see if that works, there's evidence in the record, contemporaneous notes of Greg Keast, that they would see whether it was appropriate to change for an auto to an allo. But the issue is that has to be a decision that's made by Dr. Stein. And HMSA did not delay. As soon as HMSA heard from Dr. Stein that he might want to be doing the allo as the second part in the treatment, in the investigational arm.
If I understand you, the theme that seems to be developed here is that the Adams were really misled by their doctor. That actually HMSA had sort of made it sufficiently clear to them that this procedure was not going to be able to take place unless there was a clinical trial granted, right? And the idea is that the Adams weren't told this by their doctor and maybe they misunderstood that they would be able to have this procedure even if it wasn't clinical, but it wasn't HMSA's fault? Is that the idea?
Your Honor, Mrs. Adams understood her husband was in a clinical trial. What HMSA communicated to her is that Dr. Stein had to submit a pre-auth request to change the approved second auto to an allo. And Dr. Stein knew that, and HMSA kept on him. The issue is that, and the notes document that Mrs. Adams had a fairly good understanding, fairly high sophisticated understanding of what Dr. Stein was telling her. So HMSA is not suggesting that anyone was misled. Indeed, the written evidence of coverage, the guide to benefits, clearly laid out what was covered and what was not. So the suggestion that HMSA remained silent is also wholly unsupported in the record. Mr. Adams, neither one ever said there is no evidence in the record that they did not receive their guide to benefits.
January 17th, didn't HMSA inform Mrs. Adams that Dr. Stein needed to submit a pre-certification request for the allotransplant?
Exactly.
Well, at that point in time, didn't you know you weren't going to grant it?
No, Your Honor, because we were still expecting it to come in as a request for participation in a clinical trial based on Dr. Stein's January 11th, 2006 conversation with Greg Keast. He told him he was going to be wanting to do this as part of the clinical trial. It would have been wholly inappropriate for Greg Keast to prejudge whether there was going to be coverage under the plan until he knew exactly what the doctor was asking. And also, if I could add, there is no evidence in the record that Adams ever asked HMSA, asked Keast, is this going to be covered under my plan? And honestly, Your Honors, if that question had been asked, And there's no evidence. I've reviewed it very carefully because I wouldn't want to come up here and misrepresent myself in front of your honors. There's no evidence that that question was asked. And if it was, as counsel for HMSA, I very much hope that Greg Keast would have directed him to someone with an MD or a JD behind his name, because there were a number of different moving parts. All Greg was supposed to be doing was hounding Dr. Stein to get that pre-auth request in, and that's what he did.
So if on January 17th, Dr. Stein had submitted a pre-cert request for an allotransplant for the clinical trials, that would have been granted?
We don't know that it would have been granted, Your Honor, because as the record clearly reflects...
Then how can you say it's a difference whether it's a clinical trial or not?
It created the option for hope. Keast told Dr. Stein, submit it. It requires pre-auth and needs to go to the medical director, and they're reviewed on a case-by-case basis. So there was no guarantee of coverage in a clinical trial, but Keast couldn't say, as a matter of fact, there is no coverage until he knew what Dr. Stein was asking for.
Okay, has HMSA ever allowed as of January, had HMSA ever allowed an auto allogenic transplant in a clinical trial or otherwise?
Your Honor, that's not in the record. I really don't know. I know that there were clinical trials ongoing as evidenced by the record, but whether other members had requested coverage in the clinical trial, I do not know. The fact that the member was seeking treatment at a blue card center of excellence certainly increased the likelihood it would be approved over, say, Arkansas, but it does not guarantee coverage. It just put Keast in a situation where he could not say unqualifiedly, there is no way you're going to be able to get your allo transplant.
And yet in March 6th, when they submitted it, 2 days later, you guys came back right away and say it wasn't. So obviously there was some sort of understanding. I mean, you didn't start doing your investigation on March 6th as to whether or not it was covered, right?
No, Your Honor. When it came in on March 2nd, the medical director looked at it and said, darn, no clinical trial. Well, this isn't covered. And the ICA and Adams 1 clearly said that the plan, the insurance commissioner even agreed that the plan, a reasonable person reading it would know there's no coverage for allotransplant. The only thing Keast and, frankly, HMSA's medical management department were waiting on was to learn whether Dr. Stein was going to proceed with his stated intention to request authorization for participation in a clinical trial. Once he failed to do that, it was a fairly simple matter.
While you're on that issue, could you mention the evidence that would show that Ms. Adams understood that the only way that the allotransplant could be approved was if it was a clinical trial?
I don't know that she had that conversation with her doctor.
Is it important what her understanding was of the communications between her and HMSA?
I think it is less important than what the plain language of the insurance contract said, which
okay.
informed her,
well, let's
not covered here, might
language,
be covered there.
Let's assume the plain language is what it is, which essentially says you don't get the allotransplant.
That's not what the plan language says, Your Honor. There is a separate section that says HMSA will provide some coverage in a clinical trial on a case-by-case basis, and since she thought her husband was in a clinical trial anyhow, I don't think there was a lot of missing information.
Well, I'm just saying that because that's the way it was interpreted by HMSA, that because it's not a clinical trial, it's denied. So let's assume that the representation to Ms. Adams, though, is that your doctor needs to submit a certification. Doesn't go into detail about the different sections of the contract, doesn't do a lot of analysis with, as you pointed out, because whoever's discussing it with her may not be a lawyer, but in any case, she's just told your doctor needs to get in the request for certification. And then that's her understanding. Wouldn't that mean that she wasn't given accurate information and it caused her to rely upon that, believing that perhaps the procedure will be approved even if it's not trial, and so she relies on that and doesn't take an alternative? I think that's the theory that's being presented at this point by the Adams, that they would have pursued an alternative so they could have gotten the allo treatment earlier.
What the Adams have relied on for their kept silent argument is ignores the fact that all of this was explained in the Guide to Benefits, which fully complies with the statute that the Adams have cited from time to time throughout the appellate process, 432.1-101.5.
Well, if I understand, you're saying that we should assume she read the contract and understood that...
That is the law, Your Honor,
yes. ...this was going to be a clinical trial. Well, not exactly. I think the law suggests that there's some obligation on the part of the insurer to communicate with the insured when they have questions about coverage.
Well, no questions were posed of HMSA as to the coverage for this. There is no suggestion in the record at all that Mrs. Adams ever, or Mr. Adams ever asked,
okay, so
is there coverage for this?
Let's assume a jury is listening to this evidence and they see that Ms. Adams talked to HMSA, which is quite clear because there are records of it. And then the argument before the jury is, when we had the communication, it was communicated to me that I'd have a chance for this, or my husband would have a chance for the allotransplant, and then I was surprised when it didn't turn out that way.
So let me address 2 points briefly, if I could, because I realize my little red light is on. I appreciate your tolerance. The importance of written requests is because that's what's required by the plan. There is no indication that Mrs. Adams didn't have her plan. And honestly, the mere fact that she knew pre-authorization had to be requested implies that the answer could be yes or no. So to say, I knew we had to make this request, but I didn't know you might say no, well, that's inherently contradicted by the fact that a request had to be made. Applying the actual terms of the insurance contract here, which is important, and we're not saying that the insurer's duty ends with the application of the insurance
but
contract.
But are you saying it begins when there's a written communication and that the oral communication under the contract isn't sufficient?
What we're saying, Your Honor, is that a claim is defined in the plan as a written request for payment. So there was no claim until March 2nd, 2006, despite HMSA's best efforts to get Dr. Stein to submit it sooner.
So when the wife says, you know, I'd like to know whether there's coverage for my husband because he might die unless this procedure takes place, that can't be interpreted as a claim for a procedure that might save her husband's life?
If there was any evidence in the record that she had said that, we might be having a different conversation, but there is no evidence in the record or in her declaration that she asked whether it would be covered. What her declaration says, submitted in opposition to the motion for summary judgment, is that we assumed it would be covered. Nobody ever told us it wouldn't be covered, which is not true, because the Guide to Benefits said, as a rule, it's not going to be covered, but it also had a section that said there is coverage for procedures performed in a clinical trial.
Well, and November 2nd, she requests information on facilities that do stem cell transplants, right?
And she was approved for a stem cell transplant, Your Honor.
Okay.
And auto.
Well, I mean, she was approved after a written request, or was that enough?
Just after a written request was made on December 14th, 2005, okay. She was approved for the auto.
In any case, you might say that sounds like a request, and especially in light of the fact that it was followed up with a written request. And then not too long after, on December 6th, Ms. Adams asks HMSA if there's anything that needs to be done before going to City of Hope, and HMSA provides Patricia with a phone number for pre-certification. So by providing a phone number, perhaps the case manager was trying to facilitate her request for a claim for treatment at the City of Hope.
I believe he was trying to make sure she had the best evidence available to her.
That was the kind of communication that had something to do with making a claim.
It was around the 2005 claim for auto, which was promptly approved by HMSA. What was before the trial court, what was remanded by the ICA, and what is respectfully before this court is the 2006 request for an allo transplant.
That may be. I was just trying to indicate that perhaps this would be evidence of a claim, even though it's a telephone conversation and it hasn't necessarily been put in writing, that's all.
Well, basically, HMSA's position is that there's no duty of good faith before a claim is submitted, correct?
What HMSA is saying, and what I believe is an accurate statement of the law, is that it's impossible to mishandle a claim that has not been made. And the policy defines a claim as a written request for coverage.
Well, the issue is whether or not there's a duty of good faith, whether you can have a tort of bad faith before the claim is actually submitted. It is your position, and apparently the ICA agreed, that you can't have a tort of bad faith before the claim, for mishandling of a claim, before the claim is officially submitted, which means that there is no duty of good faith before the claim is actually submitted.
Your Honor, that's not correct. What HMSA argued is that plaintiff alleged bad faith mishandling of his claim, and the tort of bad faith mishandling of a claim requires a claim. That is not to say that there might be other evidence, not before this court and not in the record for this case, which might give rise to a claim for bad faith.
What was the amended complaint?
Pardon me?
I'm sorry. I only looked at the first amended complaint. The second amendment complaint, what date was it? September of 2000? Nine or something like that?
The second amended complaint.
Did it differ a lot from the first
amended? It did, as a matter of fact, Your Honor, because the first amended complaint included a number of claims that the ICA had specifically decided in favor of HMSA. And so with a threat to move to strike and do motions practice, Mr. Del Castillo properly agreed to narrow the second amended complaint to the claims that survived Adams 2, that being the second ICA decision. So there is a difference. And that claim focused on, you can look at page 1, that's ROA 30, and you can, and also in the actual pleadings, the second amended complaint, paragraph 1 and paragraph 68, that's in docket number 28 on pages 1021 and 1035, they both specifically state the claim that survived the appeal to the ICA as being for mishandling of a claim. And the reason it was filed is because no one knew at that point when the claim was actually made. And as we stand before you today, Adams agrees that the claim submitted on March 2nd was timely decided. I think what's troubling the people in this room is perhaps a too broad statement by the ICA, but this court can and should uphold Judge Crandall's very correct decision based on the record that was before her and do whatever it wishes with the broader statement by the ICA.
Thank you, Ms. Perkins.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Just a couple of quick points. First of all, there's nothing in the record to indicate that the Adams were ever given the policy. But even if they were given the policy, when they asked for assistance as to what this policy means, what's covered, there's evidence in the record that Ms. Adams asked, what is the coverage? It's incumbent upon the insurance company to help them understand, especially when they know that this procedure is going to be excluded. ANOCA says that bad faith is much broader than just claims handling. There, this court said, surely an insurer must act in good faith in dealing with its insured and in handling claims, indicating that dealing with the insured is a much broader concept. The second amended complaint in paragraph 70 goes much beyond just claims handling. There's allegations that HMSA failed to warn the Adams. They failed to advise and assist the Adams. It's much more than just claims handling.
Anything further, Mr. Everly?
Your Honor, I would just add that we ask that the court vacate the entry of summary judgment and remand for a trial on the merits. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. This court will take this matter under advisement.
Eku iluna, please rise. Ua ho'omalolo ia mai ne. Pea aha ho'opolopolo ki eki I hanohano e komoko aina o Hawaii. This Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now recessed.